Welcome to the Game of Thrones podcast, the officially unofficial podcast for Game of Thrones on HBO. I'm Jim.
And I'm Aaron.
And we're about to do a spoiler cast. This is where I do the intro and I turn it all over to you.
Except for this is a unique one because it's half non-spoiler too.
So
like do not be afraid of all spoilers. Like we got half non-spoiler stuff because this is our combined feedback spoiler podcast.
I came for spoilers. I feel duped.
Well, good. before we get, there's one thing. We kind of promised that we would have coverage of season two before season seven last year.
I feel duped on that as well.
You should have. We did not do that because of a couple of reasons. Number one, Game of Thrones was supposed to be in April.
Right.
Or late March. And here we are, middle of July, just talking about the preview podcast. What happened was if we had come out the way it's supposed to, then we had a fairly light February schedule that we would have done that when trying to get that done during, like, you know, we just got finished with a 3-show per week Fargo, Leftovers, Better Call Saul marathon. We just didn't have the time.
Yeah.
So what we're going to do is do season two after this season. And then I think we'll probably do season three after the final season, season eight, as a nice little kind of send off and give her, you know, the ease of transition into civilian life for all of us Game of Thrones veterans. That's the plan. So sorry about that, but we just didn't have any spare time to do it during the lead up to Game of Thrones like we wanted to. So that's it. We already talked a lot because we had the convention Q&A and stuff. We've already talked a lot about the season. I thought we could get just right into what the people want to talk about.
Yeah, that sounds great.
All right, Mike from Louisiana. I have a simple question. We won't know this for years, but will you be conflicted about the series finale if the endgame is completely different from the books that still need to be written? It's possible endings will be awesome, but it would be very strange if the Double D's and Gurm come up with completely different takes on how the story concludes. What would take precedence? Is one right and one wrong? I foresee complications.
As a show watcher only, no. I'm not worried about this in the least.
Right.
Because really the show will be my ending, and that's probably it.
I mean, are you asking me if people are going to have difference of viewpoints? Look, in the real world, we cannot decide what is going on with our climate, how we should care for the poor and sick among us, whether the person in the White House is a decent human being.
How to Train Our Dragons.
If you're asking me, are there going to be fan nerd battles with much fan nerd bloodshed over the canonicity of Game of Thrones vis-a-vis a Song of Ice and Fire? Of fucking course there will.
Yeah.
Now, I will say that I'm of the opinion that George is never going to finish these novels.
Okay, problem solved.
Like, I do think that that's the most likely outcome at this stage in the game. The only dark horse hope I have is that once the series concludes, and I'm assuming that people like it, that will take enough pressure off of him that then whatever stress-based writing block he's got will unclog and will get his version of what happens at the end. But I think what's but that's a best case scenario. And it's funny is like I thought that would be a minority opinion, but I asked several times at the Con of Thrones, which is was a concentrated collection of very pro Game of Thrones and the Song of Ice and Fire people, and like less than 10% of that fandom. Whenever I took a straw poll of the audience, and I did it like 5 or 6 times, less than 10% of the fans thought that we would get books. Period.
Mm-hmm.
No one thought we'd get him. I asked for a show of hands if anyone thought that we would get wins before season 8. Nobody thinks that.
Yeah.
So, like, that's not a challenge. If you want to email, like, I'm the one true
it's just a
Kingsguard for George. Like, fine. I'm telling you, you and all your buddies are in a very, very small minority.
Mm.
And that started to seep into, like, the Song of Ice and Fire subreddit. Mm. The Game of Thrones, so like it's starting to be a growing dread that we're just not going to get an ending to these books. But if we do, fuck yes, there will be. And it's an unprecedented situation. It's fascinating from a purely human drama standpoint. It's fascinating from a in-universe standpoint. It's crazy. It'd be like if the novelization of a movie came out and it had a different ending than the movie itself, which is what we have now.
Uh-huh.
George is doing a novelization of an original series, HBO's A Game of Thrones.
Yeah, a series that he started as a adaptation of his novels. Like, yeah, it's so weird.
It is very weird, and it's crazy. But you know, he doesn't. I mean, I saw an article today that he affirms that he does feel like there is an obligation from the fans, for him to the fans, that he has to finish these books, but. Mm. You know, obligation. If he felt that obligation at all, that's nothing has changed in the last 15 years.
Well, I think the unspoken thing there is that he has to finish it in a way that he thinks will satisfy the fans, right? Not in a way that just ends the story, because that's pretty easy to do.
Yeah.
Oh, and then everybody died.
Right.
Okay, done. Here you go. No, he wants to end it satisfactorily for everyone.
Yeah. I'm just amazed that, like, if the Double D's can bring this into something that gets fairly universal acclaim, it's going to make George look kind of foolish that he couldn't bring. And I get it; he's a gardener, not an architect. But goddamn, get the weed whacker out! Like that he couldn't turn this thing around and get it to that ending that we. I also don't give much currency to the idea that the endings are going to be radically different. Mm-hmm. Like, I think the way we get there, just and there's several examples already where the seasons in the middle diverge, but by the end of each season, they kind of are at the same endpoints of each book.
Right.
You know, it's going to be a simplified version, but I don't think we're going to have, like, Dany on the Iron Throne in one version and Jon on the other. Mm-hmm. Like, that would be a shit show. That would be actually kind of fun.
I think it'd be super interesting.
A real nerd civil war.
Yeah.
A hot civil war. Any other thoughts, or should we move on?
No, let's go.
Fern from New York City. Similar to Davos discovering Melisandre was responsible for the death of Princess Shireen in Season 6, which is more likely to happen in Season 7? A, B, or both, or none? A, Sansa discovers that Littlefinger had a hand in the death of her father, Ned Stark, and she plots to kill Littlefinger because of this knowledge. Or B, Tyrion discovers that Dany's new partner is the Dornish, killed his niece, Princess Myrcella, and caused discord in the new alliance.
I feel like maybe B is the most likely.
You don't think? I mean, it seems. Honestly, I think both of them are likely because these are both true things.
Yeah.
You're dealing with people that are not complete idiots, and I think the information will be discovered. And I honestly think that's going to. It seems like Sansa and Littlefinger already barely. On speaking terms.
They are, but the way they left it last season, it felt more like there was going to be some kind of, you know, on thin ice alliance between them Jon, maybe. Or at the very least, like, that's how Littlefinger was trying to play it.
I think Littlefinger's trying to play it that way, but I just don't see, like, I mean, that's, that. Okay, when I say I don't see it, I mean, I clearly can see the connection to, like, if especially... If she finds out that Jon's not really a true Stark, if he's this Targaryen kind of love child, that will sour her on his the experience of them actually being family, since they wouldn't be brother or sister at that point. They'd be cousins, I guess. But I don't know. To me, that would be a reversion to the stupid Sansa. Mm-hmm. Version of herself, which
yeah,
I wouldn't
totally.
Find satisfying.
No, I want it to maybe be her playing him. Him thinking that he's got her wrapped around his finger when, in fact, he is the one being wrapped.
Right, because the other thing you got to ask yourself is, will Littlefinger... Either Littlefinger's going to run out of rope and hang himself,
yeah,
or he's going to sit the Iron Throne.
Right.
Is that what George is playing
You win or you die. I mean,
yeah.
That's it.
So I don't think Littlefinger is going to win, so yeah. Thus he's going to die, and the dramatically appropriate person to be the agent of that death would be Sansa.
I just think, like, who has that information, right? Really, it's only Cersei, isn't it?
I don't...
If she even has that information. Like,
well,
Varys,
that's the thing. Like, I wonder Varys if she thinks about the circumstances of Joffrey. Like, I wonder if she could put enough together. There was a hot... This is publicly available information. The analysis of it is potentially spoilery. But there's someone that pointed out the fact that on an Entertainment Weekly cover, I think it's either Sansa or Tyrion is holding the Valyrian steel dagger that you know, they tried to murder Bran with.
Right.
Which, you know, in the chain of custody, Littlefinger was at least had his fingerprints on that. And I'm wondering if that's a vector where they'll put two and two together and start thinking, oh my God, you know, you did. And the thing is, like, I
maybe.
Don't even think she needs hard evidence. I think she needs a hint, and that she can backfill what she knows of what he's capable of, and he won't be able to explain his way out of it.
Uh-huh.
I don't know.
Maybe so. Yeah, it sounds like proximity of information right. to these characters is going to be key, you know, in determining which is more likely. So
the B one about Tyrion discovering the Dany's Dornish alliance killed her niece, like that's really going to test his real politic view of the world.
Yeah.
Because it's not like they didn't have their grievances. But on the other hand, they betrayed their own. I mean, it might be a situation where maybe she banished, like she banishes the particular sister or the wife of Oberyn that did the poisoning.
Yeah.
Or the sand snakes are banished because, you know, even by your own standards, like Prince Oberyn's like, hey, we don't kill children. That's what's the difference between us and the Lannisters. Like, you violated your own social mores and customs to do this petty revenge. There needs to be a price paid.
Yeah.
And that's going to be a theme of this preview podcast, that like we have to always think about what is a character's sins and what is their just rewards, regardless of what they're currently trying to transition into being a hero or whatever. Like, you know, there is a sense of karma in this world, and I don't think you can, for example, if you're a big Jaime fan and think Jaime's going to have a happy ending, does he not ever have to pay for shoving a child out the window?
Right.
Like, that's the, you know, we forget when we all like Jaime, but he was a really terrible human being. Like, does he get off scot-free for that? Is his hand getting chopped out?
Yeah,
chopped
that's
off?
What
is
I
that,
wonder.
Is that adequate punishment in George's eyes?
I mean, maybe both hands. Let's lose both hands, and then we can talk.
Yeah.
But
his pillar and two stones.
Yeah.
All right, moving on. Eren B. My question for season 7, what's the point of Mira fucking Reed? She's been on this damn show for 5 years and is still barely a character. Can we get some plot for her besides being caretaker and official sledge dragger? I feel like she's so filled with so much badass possibility and has been around so long without being utilized. Hodor, who can only say one word, has more character development than her. I'm going to riot if she drags Ben Brand's lanky ass all the way to Winterfell to just drop dead. Thoughts on possibilities for her? Is she doomed? Do you care? Etc.
So since this is half spoilery, half not, and actually I think this information might be in the show at this point.
Mm-hmm. If not, we'll mark it for an edit.
She's a descendant of Howlin Reed, right?
Uh-huh.
Who is the only person that we know for sure might, other than Bran at this point, that might have information about...
Oh, yeah,
about,
this is... goes. Howlin Reed was there, and we still know his
about
lot. He
John
was there
Stark's,
at the Tower of Joy when he stood with Ned against the Three Kingsguard.
Right.
So this is in the show, but you'd have to be paying attention to get
so
it.
So she could be important in that regard, like proving that fact or getting John on board or something.
As a vector to introduce Howlin Reed?
Potentially, yeah.
Although I'm skeptical with 13 episodes to go that that's going to happen.
Yeah.
I've always thought that Mira was designed to be Bran's human connection. That he is going to be, much like the Blood Raven, much like the Three-Eyed Crow before him, his humanity and his connection to that is going to be tested with all the greenseeing and warging he's doing, and that there might be this moment where, you know, there's the battle of the soul for between the Night's King and, you know, his good side, and Mira might be, I know you love how much you love the power of love,
connection. We all saw what happened in Lawnmower Man. I just don't think it's going to work. Pierce Brosnan couldn't bring Joe back. It's not going to happen.
I feel like that's going to even though it is thinly sketched that they have 5 seasons of history and this personal connection and the friendship and the travels they've been through, that will matter in some way. That's our hope. That's my hope for Mira.
Sounds good.
Discover why critics are calling Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes the best film of the franchise.
What a wonderful day!
It's a jaw-dropping spectacle that demands to be seen on the biggest screen possible.
We need to go.
Hang on. It is our time. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, now playing only in theaters. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Allie. One thing I'd like to see happen is a reunion between the Hound and either Arya or Sansa, either individually or together. Mm-hmm. I really like how he went from a horrifying figure to, in certain circumstances, somewhat of a protector. I've also enjoyed seeing him overcome death and trying to live a peaceful life, at least in the show. But come on, we know he's alive in the books too, of course. I would love to see Sandor receive a bit of happiness in his life through some warm feelings between him and the Stark girls, especially in the face of a long winter and the threats that accompany it. So what are the odds of the Hound and either Arya or Sansa meeting, and what will be their relationship?
I feel like it's got to happen.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, maybe Sandor's story is not one of you know, happiness.
Well, see, there's
but he's certainly sympathetic, and I'm rooting for him as a character now.
And he's fundamentally different from Jaime, because Jaime came of a life of privilege, and I mean, I'm not saying that he didn't have his disappointments. You know, the idea that you're treated as a traitor when essentially you're the protector of the realm, and the fact that your daddy doesn't love you, and you know, your sister's a piece of work.
Your sister does.
I don't know that that gets you, like, that balances the karmic scale and gives you license to shove a child out the window.
Right.
Whereas the Hound, who has been beaten, abused by his family and his brother in particular, and has just such a shitty, terrible worldview about knights, and like, I could see him. He's already paid his karmic price, and he has got a much clearer path for redemption ahead.
He sort of pre-ordered the karma, right?
Like, right.
Like,
yeah.
He lived a life that was really hard and shitty. And then, you know, he killed the butcher's boy, but come on, he's had it rough.
Yeah, yeah. He heard about all the hype about, you know, and he pre-ordered a GameStop, and then it came, is bug-ridden, and there's no multiplayer, and he learned his lesson.
The thing is, I
think that if we learn from Arya's training with the Faceless Men, which we learn surprisingly little through that, other than her gut is made of adamantium, that she doesn't have any personal animosity towards the Hound.
Yeah, I don't think either of them do.
She was accused of lying when she tried to assert that it was. And yeah. Sansa, I think, has done a lot of growing up, and she's seen, you know, what she considers true heroic knights be terrible human beings, and the Hound. And people like Brienne, who are not her vision of a knight, actually embodying those qualities more so. So I would be very disappointed in Sansa if she gives Sandor the cold shoulder.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And Arya, too. Mm-hmm. And the fact that I also think it's important that the Hound actually did die, like, that we thought he was dead, like, that serves as a real, you know, metaphysical narrative, like, signal that he's paid for his sins.
Yeah.
So, like, again, that's the difference between him and Jaime. Jaime lost his hand. The Hound lost his life. And then was metaphorically resurrected and drafted into the side of good. So we'll see how that goes. But that's how I see it happening. Amber from Florida. It's one of these Florida women you're always hearing about in the news. All the coverage so far, for obvious reasons, has been focused on the Starks, Lannisters, Dany, and how their paths will converge and affect one another, leading to the finale of the story. I haven't heard much mention of Sam, nor do I think he shows up in a preview. Correct me if I'm wrong. I will correct you, because in the final trailer, there's a scene of him and Gilly, presumably at the Citadel, so they've relaxed their no women rule, and she's reading a very interesting scroll. You should check out, if you're wanting to interest, because this is semi-spoilery, you can check out Alt-Shift-X's analysis of the trailer, and he'll lay it all bare for you. Mm-hmm. I've long thought that he will have a huge role to play, and his stay at the Citadel will perhaps be key to the White Walker defeat. How do you see him being brought back to the story? Logically, it would involve meeting back with Jon Snow, or at least contact via Raven. What could he possibly learn at this point that we don't know as viewers or readers that would make his story important?
Yeah, I'm with you. It's got to be information. That is the character of Sam.
Right.
He's not going to fight.
Right.
He will fight reluctantly, and he will often be saved by circumstance, but his knowledge is his key.
Right.
What knowledge could he bring? I mean, we know so much as an audience now. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not sure how much the characters understand. Like,
that's right.
Like, how much do they know that it's the Dragonglass or the Valyrian Steel or whatever that can kill these whites?
Right.
Or White Walkers, rather.
Right.
Versus, like, do they think it was just, well, something killed it? I don't quite get it.
Mm-hmm.
I know somebody gets the Dragonglass, because, like, Sam
says
something about Dragonglass, right?
And there's also, Stannis mentioned, there's a ton of Dragonglass on Dragonstone, the island that's the ancestral seat of the Targaryens.
So Jon knows.
And also, like, there's been a lot of scenes in the trailers set on Dragonstone, so that could be a factor. I think the biggest mystery that's an academic one is how do you make Valyrian steel?
Mm-hmm.
Which we saw does a bang-up job of fucking up the others, the White Walkers. Yeah. So I feel like, you know, that's probably... And in the books, I think it's probably going to be a little bit more subtle and arcane, but... I think in a series, that's probably going to be his contribution, that there'll be some long-forgotten book that has the recipe for using dragon fire or some sort of magic to make Valyrian steel, and that will be one of the things that turns the tide in the battle.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, you know, the giant fire-breathing dragons.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess that's a real question is, like, you know, this is something I've been thinking more and more about, how kind of, like a lot of these... things that we're looking for, if we really think about how we kind of think about it, like, you know, John being the prince's promise, for example, and he's got Lightbringer, the fiery sword. Well, what does that look like? You know, like in the preamble to Lord of the Rings, you see Sauron, he's like three stories tall and he's got the one ring, and suddenly his mace is just like literally swinging through and 500 men are flying in every direction. Like, yeah. Is that what we think is going to happen? That seems fucking silly in Game of Thrones terms.
Sure. I don't think he's going to grow. But then how do you defeat a whole army?
How do you make the prophecies relevant? Like, it's got to be something singular about him that maybe is non-mad. Maybe I don't. That's the thing I've been really wrestling with pre-season is, like, how do you make all these prophecies be true and relevant, but not end in some conventional high fantasy kind of silly special effects fest, which we might, I mean, I don't know. We maybe does hold the sword aloft and it fucking electrocutes through everybody like Nazis in Raiders of the Lost Ark. It just doesn't feel like Game of Thrones.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. And we don't actually know that it's Valyrian steel that kills them, right? It could just literally be this one sword.
I guess, but why would a like a hand and a half bastard sword that was held by a minor house in the north, why would it be the special one?
I mean, maybe it's only the sword.
I mean, it'd
John's
be funny
hands,
as it turns out that the Mormons actually had Lightbringer this whole time. who fucking knew?
No, but it's like a sword in the
Jorah,
stone.
You were supposed to be the prince's promised. You fell in with the spindy woman and you fucked up the prophecy.
But if it's like a sword in the stone sort of thing, right? Where he's the one, this is the sword. Like, the combination of the two is the thing that does it. And they try it with Valyrian steel and it just doesn't work.
Right.
With someone else or with a different sword.
Right.
But here's the thing that I think they've confused the issue a little bit is if Valyrian steel is the thing and Dragonglass is also the thing, why have two things?
Right.
You know, like, I feel like that is... one of those needs to be a red herring, and I don't think it's Dragonglass because Sam killed a White Walker with Dragonglass.
Well, there's also maybe neither are red herrings, but maybe Dany will turn evil and she'll have to be defeated. That's another way to subvert, like, you know, because we talked before about how, like, we seriously doubt that there's going to be some, like, big fucking wedding scene, like Aragorn and Liv Tyler. Mm-hmm. You know, getting married, you know, it's a good Danny and John getting married in front of the fucking Iron Throne. And, Chewbacca gets a medal and it's everything's it seems like what I think in a lot of people's mind's eye, they think about like as a happy ending for Game of Thrones, but it's probably not going to happen. But you've got like John, who seems like very clearly to be the princess promised, but Danny, who's also got the dragons and there's also been the hints that Dany might be evil, that she might be like losing her grip on her sanity, like her old man.
Become the Mad Queen.
Yeah. But then again, we've already had a Mad Queen.
Yeah, we've got one.
We got one sitting on the throne right now. Yeah. So it's very tough. I mean, that's one of the things I think it's taking Martin a long time, because I feel like that it's not just getting to the end, but I think he does a lot of soul searching about exactly like, oh God, I've been made my name of subverting, and I don't want to have any tropes. Like that's mm-hmm. tough to write a completely unique story like that. I don't know. That's why it's so fascinating as a book reader to see the series come out. Liam from Melbourne, I have a few questions and observations I'd like to get a second opinion on. You can get three. Okay. Jim gives one too. First, I've been confused with Dany. Is she also not a product of incest also? You're correct. The Mad King married a sister. I don't have a satisfying reason why all the kingdoms kind of turn a blind eye to, like, well, that's just what Targaryens do. That was one of the justifications I noticed Cersei and Jaime talked about between themselves, like, well, if the Targaryens can do it, why not us? But the fact of the matter is, Targaryens came over from a faraway land with big-ass battle dragons. They kicked all of Westeros' ass. They sat themselves on the throne, and they started fucking their sisters.
What are you going to do about it?
The second they lost their dragons and got a little crazy, there's a big, I don't know if you heard of it, it's called the Robert Rebellion, and they threw him out. So it's weird that you have this foreign army that embraces the faith, but also turns its nose up at a large part of the faith's tenets and what goes against what the common man and woman of Westeros thinks is decent. But that's the world building that George has given us. Secondly, just after the Starks took back Winterfell, I'm beyond certain we will see a lion on King's Landing during the intro sequence. I thought that would be cool and people will lose their shit, so I'm going to call it early. What do you think about that?
Instead of the stag?
It seems like a cheap thing to do, and it would really, you know, the Mad Queen sitting on the throne, like, she just abandons any pretense of Baratheon legitimacy and just, like, you know, whatever. I've lost my kids.
To honor her father or something and her family?
I just think that she sees herself as a Lannister.
Yeah, I think so.
I don't think she hates her father. I think her big problem is she actually thinks that she's the true legacy of Tywin Lannister.
Yeah.
And she could not be more wrong.
Yeah.
Lastly, because of a short amount of time left in the show, could it possibly be that the Hound is the one that kills Cersei?
I doubt it.
What is the dramatic? I mean, you got to think of, like, what is the narrative purpose that that serves? And, like, yes, that's meta, but also this is a written story. So what would the narrative purpose of the Hound killing Cersei be? The Hound is nowhere near Cersei right now.
Mm-hmm.
I think that anytime you suggest someone killing Cersei that's not already in King's Landing, because I kind of think Cersei's dead this season. Like, I feel very strong that Cersei and Littlefinger don't make it out of the season.
Yeah.
But I don't see the Hound. I don't think it fits any kind of narrative, and I also don't think you say what you will about jetpacks. I just don't see it coming from outside the court.
Yeah, I think by the end of the season we have a non-Lannister, non-Baratheon on the throne,
or maybe no.
Honestly,
one.
Or maybe no throne. Yeah,
and John's like,
depending on what Danny's going
to
do.
We have to go up north to defeat to kill these ice zombies you know nothing about. Finally, someone who knows less than him. He just lords it over her. Fine, we'll just leave the no one on the throne. Is that what you want, John? Yes. All right. Ross B. was listening to preview podcast, a topic of Arya using Littlefinger's face. At least I think it was him.
Yeah.
But the question was whether a person's face they were wearing had to be that of a dead person. While doing my own rewatch in episode 10 of season 5, after Arya steals a face and kills Meryn Trant in the whorehouse, she comes back to the House of Black and White, and Jaqen is waiting with her, for her with the other page, and they confront Arya. Jaqen says that Arya stole a face and that the death must be paid for with a life, and he drinks the poison. While Arya is crying over the body, Jaqen appears behind Arya, so he's wearing the page's face, at which point Arya begins peeling faces off of dead Jaqen, ending when she gets to her own and goes blind.
Mm-hmm.
The point of this is presumably Jaqen is not dead, and even if he is somehow in the House of Black and White, has two of his faces to be one, the dead man, and the man standing behind Arya in a scene. As far as we know, Arya is not dead, so it would appear that you do not need to be dead for the faceless men to appear in your face, at least in the show.
I think there are a lot of assumptions in there.
Right.
When drawing your conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
Like, these are actual physical faces that they need to have, mm-hmm. and that there is only one copy of a face that one person can use at one time.
Right.
I think of it much more mystically. Like, we keep the faces around as a symbol, as like tokens, but really you don't need a face to take a face.
Yeah. I mean, this points out how little we know about how this face swap and stuff works. The other thing is, I was going to attack it from the angle of, are we certain that Arya actually saw these things?
Sure.
Because it ended up with her being blinded. She's obviously, you know, either mystically or like the faces are poisoned unless you know how to use them precisely. It's likely that she could be tripping balls throughout this whole thing, this whole transformation that left her blind. So
for sure,
it's tough. My assumption is it has to be, and the other assumption is that this is Jaqen's true face,
right?
Like, we don't know how old Jaqen is. We don't know what he really looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of the problems in a universe where you can swap faces and glamour and, you know, you can get really off in the weeds with the theory that you can't really disprove, but you guys ask yourself, like, does it make narrative sense?
Yeah.
Also, I don't have a problem with it because I don't think Littlefinger – I think Littlefinger's going to not even make it through the halfway point.
Yeah, so this Arya, is just something I want to see.
Yeah, Arya having Littlefinger's face, not a big problem for me. Anyway, Jake from Cincinnati. Came across your podcast last year. I'm a big – I just left it in the dick sucking.
Yeah.
God damn it. Anyway, skip. One thing I've never really heard you guys discuss is the vastness of the land of the North. I'm only a show watcher, and I don't know the books make it easier to comprehend with maps or such, but for us show watchers – characters just seem to show up in the reaches of the north of the wall with very little explanation or travel, and the White Walkers and Whites seem to have their own Littlefinger-type jetpacks.
Yeah, they've all got jetpacks.
My point is, do you think it's important as show watchers to understand the boundaries and landscape north of the wall, or do you think we just accept it? If you're north of the wall, you're north of the wall, and there's probably going to be White Walkers about.
Yeah, that's how I view it, honestly. Like, I've seen the maps, and I know the north is vast.
And uncharted. Who knows how big it is?
Sure, but I don't mean north of the wall. I mean, the north, northern region of Westeros.
North is approximately as big as the rest of the six kingdoms combined.
Right. So I've seen all that. But I really, when I think about it, as, you know, the south, the middle, the north, and beyond the wall. Those are kind of like the four divisions I have. And then Essos, you know.
Right. As far as the jetpack, I have heard rumors. Someone said, sort of at the con, someone from the behind the scenes had said this, that like, if you didn't like the jetpacking before, buckle the fuck up.
Sure.
Because the reality is these guys are trying to write a story from a few pages of bullet points from George Martin. They don't have the luxury of just stopping things for 15 years to figure this stuff out. So, like, you're going to see people bouncing back and forth across the Narrow Sea, which I don't have a problem with. I have more of a problem people traveling by caravan from the wall to King's Landing.
Right.
But... you know, the Double D's did not sign up to write George Martin fan fiction, and that's what they're doing. So I'm cutting them. This is not the podcast to come to cry about jetpacks.
Okay.
Those objections have been noted, and they're just going to bog us down if we continue. Like, if that breaks the immersion and it ruins the story for you, I understand. I'm not judging. I'm just saying, like, I'm not going to take time to debate when I've been told that the jetpacking is going to get worse. Because they have to have people flying around solving this problem. And again, they can't shut it down to figure all this shit out like George can.
It's tough because I do think of – I do consider proximity, like I said earlier, when I'm considering like what I think is going to happen.
Right.
But when you strap jetpacks to everyone, it doesn't completely go out the window. But but you have to focus, I guess, like you said, more on the narrative than the actual physical locations of everyone.
Is the are people like I would be more concerned of characters' motivations, like people ally that don't make sense, than can this person physically traverse from the reach to beyond the beyond the wall in the next episode?
Yeah.
So and there's a lot of there's a lot of chronology that doesn't make literal sense going on here.
And I think when it's important, like if you want to say, these armies are here and those armies are there and they're headed to the same place, which one's going to get there first? I think the show will tell you.
Right.
That will indicate like we can never get there before Stannis' armies. I know he's dead, but as an example.
Yeah, I mean like a Littlefinger says, they'll never get here to this battle, they're 2 weeks away, and they show up the next episode. Feel free to call bullshit.
Right.
They need
right.
to explain that.
Yeah.
But
the show will let you know, like, these people are too far away for this.
Right on. Doug L., after Marcella's death, Jaime tells Cersei, fuck fate, but it seems the characters are all at the mercy of supernatural forces and have no true ability to influence their fates at all. Which got me thinking about the tragedy of Hodor. From the moment Bran accidentally fried his brain, or perhaps long before, his fate was sealed, along with everyone else around him. Events had to conspire to get Bran and Hodor to the Raven in order to close the time loop. But it doesn't stop there. Melisandre explains that she had no power to bring Jon back, that the Lord of Light gave her the power to do it in that moment because there was some greater plan for Jon. Although I will say that's what every religious person says about miracles.
Right.
So, I mean, even Jesus pulled the whole, it's not me, it's the man
upstairs.
You gotta
have some humility, yeah.
Yet again, supernatural forces are, because it's, water and wine's one thing. You brag about it, you're not going to win any friend. You're not going to start a religion doing that.
No.
Yet again, supernatural forces are manipulating events to their own ends. Indeed, most of the prophecies on the show have come true as well. Melisandre predicted the deaths of Robb Stark, Joffrey, Balon Greyjoy. Maggie the Frog predicted the deaths of Cersei's three children, and the list goes on. Looking into season 7, it appears that all the complex moving pieces that are the characters in the show are making choices, but if all their choices are predetermined, then do the characters have real agency?
Oh, God. Welcome to Philosophy 102, I guess.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's not exactly 101, no. But it's
201.
Yeah. Man, that's a great question, and I think it's fun to explore in fiction, because I don't know, in the last couple of years I've had this sneaking suspicion that maybe everything is, that like...
The universe is deterministic?
Yeah. Mm. That really what we're seeking to do is understand the choices that we've already made.
Right.
And even if you don't believe the universe is predetermined, there's this uncomfortable fact that all the latest neuroscience coming out says that we as humans make decisions in milliseconds that we then later use our higher brain functions to justify. Mm-hmm. The choice is already made by the way our biological machine was set for that day, and we just struggled to justify why we did it. So it could be that, like, yes, you do have free will, but we, for whatever biomechanical reason, don't exercise it in the way that we would be comfortable talking about it. And that has a whole bunch of other uncomfortable decisions, like how do you punish criminals if, mm-hmm. you know, any given person, any given day could make the same choice. You know, it's like I'm saying, it's like, it's big, heady stuff you're talking about, Doug. This is a podcast about dragons.
Right.
To make dick jokes, okay? Why don't you get the Lord of Light to bring back Carl Sagan and pass that one by? Do you have anything? Because that's the thing. Like,
no, it's a fair question. Like, I
would totally love it if this becomes like some kind of super awesome like Donnie like fucking Brand's Donnie Darko.
Yeah, they're absolutely touching on that kind of stuff.
That would be sweet. I'm all for it.
Yeah, I just don't know how deep this series of books wants to go. This show wants to go on that topic.
Right.
Is that something they did because they thought it would be cool? Or is that something that they want to explore more going forward?
Right.
And Bran's character is great for that. I think he's uniquely set up in this universe to be that kind of subject.
Right.
I don't know if they'll go there.
Haley, do you think it's possible that Bran will use his new powers to see who pushed him from the tower? It seems like such an obvious thing that he would want to go back and see, assuming that he can do...
Wait. To see... Bran wants to see who pushed him from the tower?
He doesn't know. Remember, he had a coma, and he has no memory of that day. He doesn't know Jaime threw him out.
He doesn't?
No, he doesn't.
Oh, shit. I was under the impression that you would remember something like that.
No. So...
How do you punish a kid who doesn't remember it? His mom was very angry. I told you no climbing.
Right.
Little shit.
Yeah, well, you know. I don't know. I mean...
Huh.
Yeah, that'd be interesting, and it also would set up the horns of the limb. Like here's the thing. Like, I do feel like there's something there about Jaime and his redemption arc that we want it to happen. It might be one of the last subversions George makes, that this is something we want to happen, but he's like, oh no, remember he tried to murder this child just because he saw him and Cersei fucking.
Yeah,
this guy can't have a happy ending, and even though he's no longer that person, he still has to pay that price, because how is he going to talk his way out of that when, you know, he's across a table from Danny and John and dragons and warging Bran, and that seems grim.
I agree with that. At the same time, I think it's a little petty if Bran goes back and sees that and is like, oh, well, screw this White Walker stuff. I need to concentrate on killing Jaime and making him pay.
But that's so
I don't think they really care that much right now,
because I do think they're kind of low-key exploring, like, you know, I talked about Mira being his connection to humanity. There's a little Dr. Manhattaning going on here. The fact that you cannot retain all of your humanity and perspective on things once you start warging and time traveling and green seeing and predicting the future. Like, you say petty, but, like, you know, Dr. Manhattan just casually exploded mobsters in an Italian restaurant. That's
fine.
Overkill.
What I'm saying is, like, deal with the threat at hand. Like, I don't think this is a season 7 thing.
I think Jamie's going to be sitting feasting in the Red Keep, and he's just going to explode.
Yeah.
Just be turned inside out, and it's going to be Bran, and he's going to be all blue.
Yeah.
Giant dong.
Maybe there's something that happened in that room
uh-huh.
that we didn't see as an audience, but Bran actually caused his own fate.
Right.
Similar to Hodor.
Right, right. He whispers in his own ear, don't look down. don't climb up here. And I'm like, what? And then he just sees a face full of Cersei's bush.
Yeah.
All right.
How close did he get?
Too close. Too close.
Okay.
Too close for his continued walking. Dan from Philly, just wondering, since you guys like the season or the finale of Fargo so much, how do you feel about a choose-your-own-adventure-style ending for this?
Oh, God.
Sorry I had to take the shot, but seriously, I feel a sort of a Reservoir Dogs type ending might be in store. When you think about it, almost any conglomeration of characters want or have wanted the others dead. Somehow I see dearly loved Imp dying tragically by mistake in a weird way that will just floor the viewers.
Damn it. No.
So he's alluding to the fact that Fargo and The Leftovers, both the season, ended with challenging the audience to decide for themselves which version of events that they thought actually happened.
Yeah.
I think Game of Thrones would be pilloried for that, mm-hmm. because Fargo season 3 and The Leftovers entirely was kind of set up to ask that question.
Yeah.
And to ask how we feel about it. It was an examination of those choices that we make. I don't think that's Game of Thrones. And it's too late to pivot into that kind of thing.
Yep.
Like, this is a narrative. This isn't a thought experiment. This isn't a social. This isn't a meditation on grief and loss and how we and recovery. This is a narrative and a political drama, and it fucking needs an ending.
Yep.
So. I'm with you. Double D's, if you've been watching a lot of prestige drama and you're taking furious notes like, hey, this mm-hmm. might be a way out. I don't think you got Schrodinger's Iron Throne. I think you got to make a decision, guys. You feel, I mean.
Yeah, totally. I feel you.
Like I've said, I don't think I'm a hypocrite for saying that they had these shows are narratively way different in what they were trying to do.
Yep.
So that's why I think it works for the other shows and wouldn't work for Game of Thrones. Alex F., I've been a professional copy editor for greater than 10 years now, but every time I hear the prince that was promised, I cringe. Yet I was, because it should be the prince who was promised. That would imply the prince is an inanimate object. Yet I was thinking, is Gurm that much of a noob and his editors, whom we know make copious notes and commentary in his margins, just flatly overlook the grammatical error of prince who was promised over and over? Or is it intentional? Is the prince not a person at all? Maybe we ought to dive in Westerosi entomology. Would you be surprised if the prince was promised was not an actual person?
It's ghost.
It's ghost. It's pounce.
Maybe John gets killed again. He wargs into ghost, and ghost is the prince that was promised.
Yeah. Yeah. Kim Renfro from The Insider was pushing a bunch of pounce that was promised joke theories at the con last week. That's Tommen's kitten, mm-hmm. if you didn't know. I mean, maybe. And if you so, congratulations, Alex. You've got this is the only time I've ever seen this take.
Yeah.
Or even this kind of metatextual analysis.
So an insight that only an editor could give, right?
Yeah, if you got it, emails back in 18 months and claim all the internet points because you cracked it wide open.
Yeah. I don't think that's going to be the case.
Yeah,
I
don't either.
Look, they're big books. They're big books. There's a lot of words.
Right.
They miss some things.
Yeah. You know,
if you had been the copy editor, that would not have happened.
Rhaegar was illiterate. He's barely literate when he's reading those prophets. He was sounding them out syllable by syllable, mistranslated it all. Julian S. I think we need to talk about Gilly's baby, a.k.a. Little Sam. Now, we know in this show with characters jetpacking up and down Westeros and given explanations is that a lot of time is passing and it's just how it is. Mm-hmm. The point is, a lot of time has passed in a show, especially for the last season gone, so why is that baby that's born in season 2 remains a baby in Gilly's arm at the end of season 6 with Sam in Old Town? This seems ridiculous, yes?
Sure. Yeah.
These are the
You're not wrong, but
you're right.
Does it matter?
So I will say that the suspension of disbelief is challenging because it does ask you to accept a roughly... You know, I'm not saying it's only been, that there's literally been 6 years have passed, but it does ask you to kind of believe a few years have passed or a while mm-hmm. has passed while simultaneously believing that Gilly's baby hasn't aged.
Yeah, and you've got the opposite problem in the child actors, right?
Right.
Who started this thing. So now they're all 23 years
right.
old. They've grown up. They've got 6 feet taller, and yet this baby remains the same. So I totally feel you, but...
And part of this
is
George.
Care.
Honestly, George kind of fucked this up because the whole problem with Feast and Dance is that he originally intended there to be a 5-year flash forward, so that the children would all age into roles that would be plausible.
Yeah.
But then when he tried to do that, he saw that there were so many questions that were asked by that just jump forward in time, and so many things that he sat down and tried to then come up with a narrative that eliminated a 5-year gap. Which so a lot of this is George's fault. And the showrunners are just trying to make this as clear as possible with the fact that they have teenage actors who, by the way, not for nothing, it's amazing that Isaac and Sophie and Maisie and Kit, they've all turned out to be really good actors.
Mm-hmm.
And when you cast them so young, you just don't know.
Sure.
So, you know, but the thing is, you can't, I don't think it's ethical to retard their aging in real life.
I don't think so.
So you can't like take Maisie Williams' blood and throw it through a centrifuge, remove all human growth hormone and be like, sorry, you can't have babies at the end of this.
Also, you got to start smoking and drinking coffee.
You do. We have to stunt every bit of your growth.
Yeah.
What are you going to do? I mean, that's the thing. The jetpack stuff, this stuff, like you either got to decide whether this is going to bug you or you can turn off that part of your brain and enjoy it because it's an irresolvable problem.
Yeah.
That you are correct to point out. Let's roll right along to Colin C. Something I'm excited for, but that gets me the most pumped in the trailer, is seeing Beric Dondarrion and what looks like the North unsheathing a sword and then having it go up in flames.
Yeah.
Looks amazing. Just want to see if you would discuss that and what role Beric and the Brotherhood without banners could play in Season 7.
That is the description. That is the depiction of what Lightbringer is described as, right?
Yes.
So he's apparently got it at some point this season.
There's the implication that Beric's sword trick is more like, you know, pyrotechnics.
Like a Melisandre vials of poison and such.
Exactly. Because in the books, Thuros of Mir is the one, he did that like in tourneys for like a stunt.
Oh,
he just set his full sword on fire and like, I'm the priest of the light. And so it would just go through and bash in these melees. So the real question is, what is the path of the Brotherhood? I think the Brotherhood is interesting because their mission has been to fight for the people.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like their role is to maybe awaken and remind people their duty to the people. And that they'll be important because they're an elite fighting force that can help John out, even if Dany doesn't help him or if Dany's too mired in the South to take a stand against the White Walkers. I think that's their goal.
Okay. I don't know much about them, honestly. Like they're more mysterious in the show than they are in the books.
Right. They're a little bit more morally ambiguous, but that's also because they're, well, I mean, shit, the Brotherhood, book Brotherhood, they're, I mean, and story and show Brotherhood are very different at this point.
Yeah.
And we're also way past the books at this point. So, but I do think they're going to be a supplementary fighting force for John. It seems like in the scenes where you see him up north, they're with him.
Yeah.
So that's where I think they're going to do. I don't have any more insight than that, unfortunately. Jordan, what do you guys think is going to happen with Melisandre now that she's banished by the King of the North? I feel like she could play an important role in the fight against the others, but I'm wondering how she'll do that and who she might team up with.
So I'm thinking she teams up. I don't know if it's a team up. I don't know if it's like dream team sort of thing, but I'm thinking she hooks up at some point with Tyrion and Dany and Varys and their whole alliance, because we had those moments in last season where Tyrion was trying to connect with the Red Priestess and, you know, using the religion as a way to get the people on their side.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like Melisandre as a Red Priestess herself could be valuable in that effort.
Yep.
I really don't know, though.
You also saw the Red Priestesses and priests across the ocean. They're, like, solidly behind Dany, so I wonder if there's, like, a franchise opera. Like, look, you need to get on.
Yeah.
I get it. You raised this other dude from the dead, but, you know, all of her pamphlets say Dany.
Right.
So, like, get on message.
Yeah, I don't know.
I
think that's
like
one of the wild cards, you know?
Right. I also feel like Melisandre is going to be seen as a force for good in the end, that she's been wanting to she's been wanting to address the White Walkers and that threat for the whole time.
Yeah.
Like the Battle of the Seven Kingdoms was always a sideshow for her. The real mm-hmm. war, she's been the one character from the very beginning who's been saying that since she came on screen. Like, mm-hmm. I'm here for the prince that was promised. Want to clean this shit up so we can go and do the real thing. So yeah, you might quibble with her methods.
Yeah.
You might ask questions about, you know, how good are the gods of Westeros or the god or goddess of Westeros, but I do think that she's going to be ultimately seen as an engine for good.
Yeah, it's going to be tough for me to forgive her.
Well, she might have to pay, and again, she might have to pay that price too, because she's done bad things. She's done bad, morally questionable things in the certain, uh-huh. and I feel like that those people get punished. Elias Miles, my question is about the horn Sam has. Do you think this is the horn the King of the North was looking for. It was rumored to be able to have the power to destroy the wall. So this is
a book-centric thing, right?
It's kind of a book-centric thing. It was also shown in the show. Maybe I should have put this in a spoiler section. But because the bottom line is, I don't think this is gonna be a thing. Mm-hmm. I think they put that in because I think at this point they didn't even have a Dance of Dragons out yet, mm-hmm. and they were hedging their bets about, like, there's so many red herrings and so many things that are dramatically important for George to give a real breathable world that has a lot of complexity and a lot of, but when you're trying to stream that, to pare that down to 73 hours, some of that shit's got to go, yeah. Which is why I think the Greyjoy shit has been really streamlined. The Dorne stuff is really streamlined. And I think this horn thing is going to go the way of the dodo. Mm-hmm. The dragon glass obviously is important because they've kept mentioning that, but we haven't heard anything about that horn since, I don't think.
Not that I recall.
So there you go. Sharon and S, going into the end game, we think we know where the pieces are going. Cersei's going to go down in flames. Jaime's on a redemption arc. Is he? Littlefinger's still playing the game, but the game doesn't matter anymore. John and Danny together are Azul, a hula hoop, come again. Bran is a psychic secret weapon against the dark, but let me ask you this. Where's the Ned? More specifically, the Ned beheading we don't see coming. The most satisfying thing about this show and Gurm's storytelling in general is it can still surprise us, even in narrative bursting with familiar archetypal characters, settings, and tropes. What? Do you have any thought about this? Because I guess one answer is we're far enough along there are no more surprises. This is all resolution.
Be. Yeah.
It's too late to zig when you can zag.
The other possibility that you brought up earlier is the Dany is the next big surprise.
Right.
You know, going evil, going right. Mad Queen.
Right.
I can't think of a whole lot of other.
Or even if Dany, like, it's very hard for me to think that both John and Dany are going to survive at the end of this. Or maybe even both of them. Hmm. And I wonder, If Dany doesn't turn evil, maybe she just has to sacrifice herself to win the day. Or maybe John has to sacrifice herself. Himself. Hisself.
Uh-huh.
Maybe he's going to transition into a woman. I mean, I'm not going to judge.
Maybe.
He's the princess
that's transition
promised.
Into a wolf.
Because dragons, it's sexless. If you go to the original Valyrian, prince, princess, it's all the same, you know?
Huh. Okay.
That's kind of true, kind of not. I just
I didn't know that about
dragons. Just having fun because we haven't got that. We're about to get into the spoiler section.
Okay.
So cool. I was easing people into it. So that's my. I think something we think that there's going to be some team up with Dany and John. And I don't think it's going to be that simple. And there's also there's also a lot of scenes of like Dany, like this is her girlhood dream. This is everything coming wildly true. That she's at her ancestral home, that she's got the armies and the navies and the dragons she needs, and it's all within her grasp, and she's going to have some scruffy dude from the north who is self-proclaimed king and broken off half of her kingdom and saying there's a bunch of snarks and grumpkins that has to be taken care of north of the wall. Is she going to roll with that? That's not something she's been dreaming about since a girl.
That's true.
I don't know. But that is where we're going to dismiss the people that are complete spoiler phobes. I don't think there's not a lot of terrors left in the darkness for you show only watchers. But I certainly understand if you don't want any hints of spoils because, you know, there is a few secrets left in the books. So if you want to come with us in the spoiler section, you're certainly welcome to. But if you're really spoiler phobe, I would highly recommend skipping it. These will be a separate section, a separate podcast entirely during the season. They'll have warnings beforehand that you shouldn't listen to them unless you are comfortable with book spoilers. But that's what we're about to do right now. See you in this. If you have feedback for us, because, you know, we've got the new episode coming out Sunday night. We'll have the instant take that night, just minutes after the episode airs. If you want to send feedback, it's GameOfThrones@baldmove.com or GOT@baldmove.com. Or you can go to our forums@baldmove.com. See everybody in the spoiler section. And now is the time in which I tell you about club.baldmove.com. You might wonder how we have the time to spend all the hours we do making all these podcasts about Game of Thrones. And we make podcasts all year round. It's a full calendar. The big answer is we're largely listener supported. It allows us to keep independent thought and opinion and not rely so much on advertisers or support from the shows themselves. And you can go to club.baldmove.com to sign up. Right now we've got a membership sale. We're giving 25% off for Game of Thrones fans for yearly memberships. Mm-hmm. You can sign up. We actually have a Game of Thrones themed club page now, which we've spruced up to include samples of the content that you'd expect from the premium editions, ad-free feeds, special sections on the forums, extra bonus content. So you can kind of get a sampling of that content, but sign up with the code GOT2017 when you check out to lock in that that 25% discount, and it's only going through July 31st.
Yep.
So August 1st, it's over. It goes back to its regular yearly pricing. Yeah, we want to do something really big to kind of celebrate and spike club memberships. And it's you get ad free, like I said, ad free feeds and video feeds. It's a great way to support independent podcasting. Plus, if you just like me and Jim talking, lots more of that.
Lunch is pretty much all that.
Some of it's more. A lot of it's are still around movies and television, but there's a lot of just general interest stuff, and there's a lot of more comedy things that we try to do. We'll be spotlighting that all season long, but we're excited about the club sale. Club.baldmove.com. GOT2017 is the promo code, all one word, no spaces. You apply that at checkout, and you'll get 25% off. Our gift to you to celebrate Bald Move and Game of Thrones. Club.baldmove.com. I want to take a break between feedbacks here to talk about some housekeeping stuff. There's lots of stuff going on in Bald Move, largely circling around Game of Thrones now. But next week, we are going to be watching Dunkirk on Thursday night, and we'll have a podcast on that. We have just a general impressions podcast for everybody. If you're a club member, you get our full spoiler takes. Dropping next Wednesday is the next chapter, the final chapter in Season 3 of The Walking Dead's Telltale video game. Playthrough we call Bad Guy Javi, where we try to make the worst decisions possible and see how bad we can screw up the world of The Walking Dead. We also have, our schedule for Game of Thrones is Sunday night, we have the instant take. Tuesday afternoon, we have the regular podcast. Friday afternoon, we have the spoiler edition. If you're a club member, you can log into baldmove.com and watch us record those. It's the fastest way to get the podcast. And the schedule, usually posted a week in advance, is on the sidebar, the coming soon or upcoming. You can see the exact times, because sometimes it fluctuates.
Or I think if you're on a mobile device, you gotta scroll all the way down.
Yeah. And then what else? We got a survey too. If you don't support Bald Move in any other way, we have a survey that our advertisers have asked. It asks three simple demographic questions. It takes under a minute to take. It's anonymous. Jim, hit him with the link.
Survey.libsyn.com/BMGOT. And Libsyn is spelled LIBSYN.
And I'll also have that link in the show notes that you can click on. So that's cool. The other thing I wanted to mention, this has nothing to do with Bald Move, but it does have something to do with cool. It's Game of Thrones. I was really impressed with the Manimals. They have a Game of Thrones concept album called Seven. And it's seven songs sung from seven different POVs in the Game of Thrones. It feels very Game of Thrones. And they performed this album live at the Con of Thrones, and they have all these costume changes, and they're just they have a really high energy rock band, and all of their players are in costume. I got to meet and hang out with some of the band. They're really incredible. They just released a video of the song Teeth, where they largely shot it, very high quality footage at the Con of Thrones. And there's a lot of concert footage of that. And I think it's really interesting. There's a link of that in the show notes as well, because I would like to shine a little bit of spotlight on them. And if you like it, great. You can get that free almost any music distribution service. You can download the song. You can download the whole album. It's on Spotify and Play. But check that out in the show notes as well. It's Teeth by the Manimals.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of Apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off badass season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints. Except, it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live. Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
Our coverage of Hot D, Fire and Blood, and the 1980s Shogun miniseries continues. But then on Tuesday, for the first time in 35 years, we asked a question. Who framed Roger Rabbit? Hop aboard the train to Toontown as we revisit this incredible blending of live action and animation to see if it still holds up all this time later.
Then on Wednesday, we get our first look at Blake Crouch's mind-bending sci-fi series, Dark Matter. First two episodes drop simultaneously on Apple TV Plus, and we'll have a pair of podcasts quantumly linked ready for you to observe.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R.R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
All right, I don't have as many spoiler emails as I did non-spoiler emails, so just everybody relax if you think it's going to be a three-hour preview podcast.
Okay.
Audrey T., throughout this season six, you debated just who would be the Valonqar. Oh, I want to start talking about some spoiler stuff in general. I said that I was out of theories last year. I think I got a couple that I want to develop in the next few weeks that I've learned from talking to some people. At the Con of Thrones, there's a really good one about Euron. That is entirely based or mostly based on stuff that came out in the preview chapters of The Winds of Winter, which I kind of resisted because I'm like, I was operating under the illusion that with all the preview chapters coming out, that surely Winds of Winter would be around the horizon. I no longer think that's true. So I've been reading the preview chapters and getting into stuff that's more based on that. And there was a surprising amount of fire in there. I got a couple, so those look forward to those in the next few weeks. Some Euron theories, some Prince That Was Promised theories. I'm hoping that my buddy Kim Renfro from The Insider will join me for some of those discussions because she was really good at the con, and we've been talking about getting together for some spoiler stuff. So got that to look forward to. All right, back to Audrey. Throughout season six, you debated who would be the Valonqar that would end Cersei's life. Now, just for the show people and for Jim that might not remember this.
Oh, I remember.
That's part of the prophecy that Cersei gets in the books when she's a little girl that the show left out. Mm-hmm. The show was all about marrying the king and having three golden children with three golden shrouds. But there's other part that after you've lost everything, that the Valonqar would come and kill you. I think it choked the life out of you or something like that. Valonqar is a High Valyrian word that means little brother. Mm-hmm. So that's like, ooh, could it be Tyrion? Because that's certainly, Cersei has always taken it to be Tyrion.
Mm-hmm.
It's why she's always hated him and been skeptical of her whole life, because she's been obsessed with subverting this prophecy. All right, so there's the background. I, like many others, have liked the idea that this would be Jaime, who is also, like, he was the last to be born of the twins. He came out, you know, Cersei popped out first, he came out second. So mm-hmm. he's technically younger. It would have a great ring of poetic justice to it, and he would have many reasons to want her dead. But on listening to your recap of episode 610, I realized if you looked at that act honestly, his next step after killing her would undoubtedly be ending his own life. I hate the thought, but I mean, honestly, he wouldn't have much to live for at that point. As the trailer points out, we're the last of the Lannisters, the last ones who count. His children are dead, his house is in ruins, and he killed the only woman he just loved, who took his tragic sacrifice of becoming a Kingslayer and made it all for naught. I actually think that's probably what's going to go down. I don't have a problem with Jaime committing suicide, because I've been thinking about it, and I think Jaime doesn't make it out of the series alive because he threw a kid out of a window.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that really, to me, says it's going to be Jaime is that Cersei went and did the thing that Jaime tried to prevent in the first place, which is destroy the city with wildfire.
And as I said last week, I'm actually shocked that show Jaime is still professing love for her.
Yeah.
Because I thought when, you know, what I got for the performance of Nicolaj when he saw the red, you know, the great sept up in flames was like, my God. Mm-hmm. Like, that's literally what he threw away his honor and his reputation to prevent.
Mm-hmm.
And now the woman that is claimed to love, but now he's done. It's so weird because in the books, he has gotten over Cersei a long time ago.
Right.
So I've always questioned why the Double D's have kept prolonging their relationship and having Jaime and Cersei being a thing, hanging on. And maybe it's to make it even more dramatic when he does betray her and kills himself.
I don't remember the exact context of that quote from the trailers, "We're the only Lannisters that matter," or whatever. Are we certain that he's talking to Cersei?
No, that's a good point.
Because Tyrion's still out there.
He could be talking to Tyrion.
And we know that he hates Tyrion, but what if he hates Cersei more at this point?
Like, well, and also, does he hate Tyrion for valid reasons?
For killing his dad?
Right.
Probably.
But, you know, he knows what all his dad did to...
And he knows about the Tyrion stuff.
And he knows Tyrion's quality. I mean, that's a big question. And that's the other thing that's different from the books. Like, you know, book Jaime feels differently about Tyrion than show, and like Tyrion hates Jaime a lot more than show Tyrion does. He mm-hmm. spends a lot more time thinking about it.
I mean, it could
and
be
also
wrong.
Jaime spends a lot more time thinking about Tyrion's final words to him, that Cersei's fucking, you know, Lancel and Kettlebacks and Moonboy for all I know. Like that's like fucking echoes in Jaime's internal monologue again and again and again.
Huh. It's barely mentioned in the show.
Right. So they're like Jaime danced with the one that brung him up until the bitter end in the show, and I'm not exactly sure why.
I don't know. I mean, if this isn't a turning point in Jaime, having Cersei commit the exact act that he lost his reputation for, I don't know what would ever be. I just can't see it.
Right. Let us talk about Caitlin. What do you think will the chances are that Tyrion will turn on Dany? Ooh, Dany betrayal theory. This is interesting. In the books, part of Dany's prophecy she continues to go over is her three treasons. So there's a lot of fascinating things that I think I largely covered in a previous spoiler edition. And if you don't know all of the previous spoiler editions that have like a theory deep dive, there's a link to that archive in the show notes for all of these spoiler podcasts. Mm-hmm. But she's got there's this series of triple prophecies that she receives in the House of the Undying that should have happened back in season two. And it turned out to just be a vision of Drogo. Anyway, she has like three loves, three betrayals, three rides, and they all have like, you know, you've got three mounts that you will know, one to wed, and one for dread. And there'll be three betrayals, one for love, one for blood, one for gold. And there'll be three. So first of all, none of that's in the show.
Yeah.
So, but to the extent that the prophecy is in the books and they'll have a fulfillment in the books, you can see that probably the main things will probably work in some way into the... So it's another way you can use the show or the books to try to predict what's happening in the show. Just providing background for everybody.
Okay.
In the books, part of Dany's prophecy, she continues to go over is her three treasons. Tyrion hasn't made it into Dany's service in them yet in the books, but the one big difference between the books and the show is the relationship with Jaime, particularly after his trial when Jaime reveals his role in the Tysha disaster. Tyrion, in turn, tells Jaime how Cersei has been sleeping with a number of other people. Damn, it's almost like you were listening to the podcast ahead of time, Caitlin. In this show, their two have never had that conversation and seem to have a stronger relationship. Tyrion claimed in season 5 to be the best Lannister killer around, and we know he's absolutely willing to take his sister down. But we haven't seen Tyrion and Dany deal with the fact that Jaime, who Tyrion may not be willing to see die in this war for Westeros, was responsible for killing Dany's father. Dany's treasons are for 1, blood, 2, gold, and 3, love. Do you think one of these may apply to Tyrion turning on Dany's orders or duties as her hand to protect her brother? Well, it makes me think about that scene where you see Jaime out of his mind with anger, riding across a battlefield alone with his spear in his offhand, charging what looks to be like Dany and her dragons. And you think, how in the hell is he going to survive that? And maybe he won't. I'm talking about it. I think Jaime's arc is he's going to die. But what if, you know, what if Tyrion recognizes him and, like, makes Dany stop? I mean, would Tyrion betray Dany at this point for his brother? It doesn't feel like it, but maybe something like that. Maybe Jaime gets lucky and stabs a dragon and kills it, and that she sees it as betrayal. Is that what turns her evil? Like, I can't trust any of these fucking Westerosi. Everyone's getting put to the flames. Like, who knows? Who knows? What do you think about that? That would be a betrayal for love, by the way, I think.
Okay.
Love your brother. Because we've there's already been other like in the show, I think the betrayal for blood was the Miri Mazdur, the witch that betrayed her with the cure for Khal Drogo. The betrayal for gold is Zaro's on Duck Sauce.
Okay, yep.
So there's still the love betrayal out there.
It's tough to say. I guess I don't know quite enough about the books to feel comfortable making a prediction on them.
Right.
I do think there's
interesting... these prophecies aren't in the show, so I guess what I'm asking you as a show watcher only, what would your level of surprise be on these?
I would be pretty surprised. As a show watcher, I think the only thing that could make Tyrion turn on her would be to find out that she's evil, and I think there's an interesting symmetry to the Jaime and Tyrion characters at that point. If he does have to turn on her,
the trusted lieutenants stabbing their rulers in the back.
And I don't. I'm not saying they'll go there. I'm just saying that's an interesting symmetry, and they might come to Tyrion might come to a greater understanding of Jaime being put in the same situation.
Sure. Sean McGee, I was just figured out that what they're going to do with Gendry. Gendry's going to replace Aegon, Blackfyre, Targaryen. He will have rode his way to the Stormlands by season 7. We'll take over Aegon's sword from there. No need to get into the Blackfyre lore, but still have a lesser claim to the throne story. I don't know. Like, I guess the big question is, Aegon came over with John Connington and the Golden Company and all these sellswords, and he had ships, and he had Targaryen loyalists in his corner. Who the fuck is Gendry going to have? He's going to roll up after 6 years, and he's going to have fantastic delts and triceps and a leech wound, and going to be like, I'm secretly the son of Robert Baratheon, the bastard child. Like,
no one cares, Gendry.
Where's his armies? Because that's another thing is, like, I think, Sean, you're falling into the classic trap of buying into this fucking royal right to rule business.
Yeah.
Because might makes right.
Uh-huh.
Aegon the Targaryen did not have a rightful claim over the Seven Kingdoms.
Yeah.
He ruled by virtue of might. Robert Baratheon did not have any kind of valid claim to the throne. He murdered and killed his way to there, and then retroactively found the grandmother that had a drop of Targaryen blood, and oh, look at there. I got the right to rule. But Gendry doesn't have any of that.
No.
Any of that.
Mm-mm.
So how, I mean, and also how interested are the double Ds of having this weird Blackfyre Targaryen Mummer's dragon? That's also, that prophecy's not part of the series either. I just don't see it.
I don't think Gendry's coming back in the show.
I don't either. I think Gendry rowing off into infinity was more about the relationship of Davos and Stannis.
Yeah.
and telling us about who I think Davos, I don't see clearly who it, but I think Davos is going to be a very pivotal figure towards the end.
Yeah.
And that was a character moment for him, not a origin story for Gendry, the rowing champion of Westeros, who will sit the Iron Throne and save us all.
Right.
So that's my, and you'll hear this a lot if you listen to this podcast. Like, there'll be lots of people with a lot of complicated genealogies and claims of throne, and I'll shoot them all down by asking, where's their armies, where's their money, where's their influence?
Yeah.
Because you don't got that, you don't got shit. Mm-hmm. Rebecca G., I will be angry this season if Bran accidentally destroys the wall. So this is the theory that Bran is marked. He's going to be, just like we saw that did something to the magical protection of the cave he was in. He's going, Mira's going to drag his lanky ass, as someone put it, through the wall, and the wall's going to fall down Jericho style. The whole Bran arc has been a slog, and a Bran destroying the wall through stupidity is not an acceptable payoff. If Westeros would have been better off with Bran dying back in book one, season one, what the fuck? The sequence where Bran accidentally betrayed the cave was good. It was abrupt and sad and frustrating with wasted potential, which is a theme of Game of Thrones character deaths. Characters are ripped away from us too soon, often through some kind of mistake or incompetence or stupidity, and the world suffers for their loss. But having gone through that, how stupid would Bran have to be to go through the wall without first figuring out if he's going to destroy it? And how stupid would Unbingen have to be to bring Bran to the wall if Bran is capable of accidentally destroying the protective magic?
I mean, I guess my question would be,
I've backed
how
away
much,
from this theory a lot.
How much does Bran know about the wall, about his mark, about, like, how much information does Bran have? Because we as watchers and readers have a lot.
Bran knows as much about green seeing and warging as Luke did when he left Dagobah the first time.
Right.
His
and
training
look
is
how
incomplete.
Stupid that was.
Or exactly.
I just don't know if he's even aware that the thing keeping the White Walkers at bay is some magical spell on the wall.
Yeah.
Do you know, like,
no,
what the status is
Uncle
of his Benjamin knowledge?
Told him that. I cannot follow you because there is a magical protection that keeps
right.
me from
when he met him, yeah.
from crossing the wall back to the other side. I'll keep the fight going on my end. And
yeah.
I mean, maybe the wall falls, but I don't think it's because Bran. I agree. I don't think it's because Bran walks through. That seems really dumb for season one of season seven, episode one, Mira to drag him through the tunnel and it just fall.
What if he's forced through the wall by the White Walkers?
It could be. I still think it's...
I mean, he has nowhere to retreat once he hits the wall, right?
Yeah. And there's no one at the wall.
Yeah.
I mean, the wall, yeah.
I mean, it might be more important that he lives than the wall stands.
Well, and the other thing is, like, the wall can't stop wildings from ranging because mm-hmm. the Night's Watch is not big enough to protect it, and that's before they went through a civil war and a brutal fight with the wildlings. I don't, like, other than I guess it's magical protection, the wall standing, I don't know. I just can't.
Well, we know one thing about the Mark is that it provides the location of Bran, right?
Right.
To the White Walkers, the Night's
right.
King. So they could be using that just to find him, and as they creep closer and closer, there is no escape but to go south.
Yeah.
And then Bran might have a choice to make, you know? Do I cross this wall? Do I save myself? Do I...
Well, that's a good question, because do the White Walkers have to cross the wall to be a credible threat? It seems like they do.
Yeah, I think so.
But it also seems like if the wall literally was a magic protection and a formidable barrier, then what the fuck did why did the Night's Watch ever form? Like, you got the wall, call it good.
It might be the wildlings, I don't know.
Right.
Keep the wildlings out, because they're not affected by the magic.
Right. I don't know. Those are all good questions. Yeah. I backed away because I just feel like it would be a cool CGI moment to see the wall crumble. And I guess it would be a dramatic possibility, but I'm kind of with you that you're right. Bran has already had enough stupid, impetuous Bran moments. We need him to be older and wiser this season.
Yeah.
Okay. So we'll see. Sean C. One thing I've been seeing in the internet, Twitter, Reddit, Axis the last few days as I thought was interesting was an interview with the costume designer Michelle Clapton. She gave to the media about Jon's attire during two crucial meetings. She says that she says that he meets with Cersei and Daenerys during this upcoming season. I think we all expected a meeting with Aunt Dany, but how do you read his meeting with Cersei, assuming it's true? Do you think this visit is just him appealing to the current ruler of Westeros for support in the wars to come against the White Walkers? Or is this some other reason he could potentially make the trek to King's Landing? I can't see Cersei being too pleased with Jon being king in the North. How do you think this plays out? This is assuming that Michelle's correct, of course. It's real hard, and I get it. Like, I want to say just because Jon's in Winterfell consolidating power, Cersei is on the Iron Throne, and Dany is crossing the Narrow Sea, and looks like very early in the season is going to be taking Dragonstone. So, yeah, Jon meeting Dany, no-brainer, but when does Jon go down to King's Landing or Cersei come to him and do some kind of treaty? Mm-hmm. Like, a raven? A raven where it's like, look,
sure, yeah,
I'm trying to do a white flag feather situation and inform you of this grave threat, and it's probably going to be stupid and you won't heed it, but I feel like for the good of the realm, I need to let you know that there's ice zombies coming. Mm-hmm. But being in the same room, I don't know.
Yeah, I honestly can't see it.
It could be a misquote or she misspoke.
I don't know.
I'm with you. I can't see how that jetpacks. I just don't see how narratively that works out, that he's going to do there and go all the way down there and then go all the way back up. And
or even like from a character perspective,
yeah,
I don't see them being in the same room without major hostilities.
Right. I mean, that's the thing. Like, I can see Jon swallowing his pride if he thought that, like, if Tywin was still the regent of the land. But Cersei, like, that's a non-starter. Mm-hmm. She's not, like, if Jon shows up in the Red Keep, I'd assume she'd just throw him in the Black Cells and you'd never see him again.
Right, exactly.
She'd be like, oh, yeah, I'll give you salt and bread and then kill, you know, it's like, this is the Lannisters. This is the Red Wedding. Mm-hmm. Jon knows all this shit. Why would he trust them?
He shouldn't.
All right, Andrew E., Sansa Stark. She's been my favorite story of the show, and I've really enjoyed watching her transformation. But is she going to make it? Every season, I'm pretty paranoid she'll die. But even after all her growth and risk of her making terrible decisions like double-crossing Jon, these risks now feel like they're increasing. I know I'll probably never see Queen on the Throne Sansa, but I'd settle for a live Sansa at the very least. And then he says, add-on thought, if she does die, is there some kind of the final season Lady Stoneheart appearance with Sansa standing in for Catelyn? Ooh.
Interesting.
That would be interesting.
No, I don't think she dies in this series. I think she has paid her dues and now she's on the up. And I don't think she sits on the throne. I think she's Queen of the North, essentially.
Right.
With whatever Jon's fate is, I don't think he's going to be King of the North.
She'd be the Dame Paramount in the North.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on that. The only way I see her dying is if she does the stupid Sansa thing of listening to Littlefinger.
Sure,
He weaves his poison against Jon. He's not even a real Stark. He's a Targaryen. You can't trust him. He's going to side with Dany. And then she fucking believes him. But
just seems unlikely at that point.
Yeah, she's like, in that case, I mean, Sansa's a really waste of a character at that point.
Yeah. If she... she can't give in to Littlefinger here.
She's got all the stupidity and irrelevance of like a Mace Tyrell, but with 10 times the screen time and POV chapters.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
All right. See, I got you. I'm watching you, Double D's and Gurm. Don't pull that shit. Russell K., is it necessary that Jon Snow's true parents are revealed? In the final episode of Season 6, Jon's proclaimed King of the North! This has to validate him as a Stark. Oh, by the way, that was my highlight of the Con of Thrones when I got a whole room of people to scream King of the North at my command. Much fun to command a room full of people to shout something.
Shouting shame was probably the best.
Right? How do you become like I was just like, you know, in a presidential campaign when you say shit and it's like thousands of people cheer, like how does that not fuck you up?
Sure.
Right? God, what a fucking trip.
Yeah, that feedback is odd as podcasters.
King in the North. King in the North. Everybody listening, shout along. If you're on a bus, I don't care. If you're in a car and you're in rush hour, you're in the middle of your office, King in the North.
And you know there will be someone else shouting at the same
time. That's right. You want to be a disloyal? Say it right now. Do it. This has to validate him as a Stark, right? Right back into Russell's email. Either way, he's a Stark, whether or not people think he's Ned's bastard Lyanna's son. In terms of Jon's true father, does it really matter if people know his father is actually Rhaegar Targaryen?
So somebody has to know. I mean, aside from Bran, because what the hell is the point of Bran finding out if nobody else knows?
Right. It matters. There's two things where it matters. It matters to Dany.
Sure.
Like, that could potentially smooth things over with her, or it could potentially ignite disaster. I think it matters to Sansa. Because, like, is John my brother or not? God damn, I pretended my whole life like he's, like, this less than bastard, shameful thing, and now I've embraced him as a brother, and now he's my cousin.
And it probably matters to John a little bit.
Matters to John. It also matters as far as this Azor Ahai prince that was promised, who was promised prophecy.
Right, right.
Because Rhaegar thinks it matters. Rhaegar thinks it's the Song of Ice and Fire. You know, there's nice symmetry there. John being a product of both the North... the Starks associated with winter and snow. His last name is fucking Snow. Mm-hmm. With him having Targaryen blood, and they're fire. You know, they're literally fire and blood. I mean, he is the Song of Ice and Fire, and Rhaegar would be proven true.
Yeah.
So I think it matters for the two characters. I think it matters to the prophecy. So as you said, narratively, why introduce it at this point if it didn't matter?
Yeah.
So
why keep it going, you know?
But again, like, how is this Prince of Promise thing gonna play out? Because it still seems really silly for him to be some kind of Superman.
Yeah, right.
I don't know. He also wants to know if the North would turn on Jon if they knew his father's Rhaegar Targaryen and not Ned Stark. I guess that's another thing. But I don't know. It feels like the North, like they're willing to set aside everything about his parentage and, like, look, this guy, through his leadership and his battle prowess, has lived up to the Stark line.
Absolutely.
And he's still got Ned Stark's blood running through him because his sister Lyanna is his mother. So I don't know how that would change. I don't know how that would change unless Jon got a big head on him and went full Targaryen and started like, ah, oh, you fucking Northerners are not, you know.
Yeah, I'm
not content with being the king of the North. I want to be king of all Westeros. March with me. But yeah, I don't know. All right, final spoiler email. Shawnee, my question is, how on board with the Tyrion as a secret Targaryen theory are you? So if you don't know...
I'm not super familiar with this theory.
Well, he goes through an email and I can answer questions at the end.
Okay.
Also, I did a pretty good take on this in one of the spoilers of past, which, again, you can see in the show notes. There's a link to the archives and our forums. It has the link to the episode and the timestamp in which I start to discuss the theory. I did not think it was true until I read the books this year. Tyrion seems to lust after dragons, going all the way back to the first book. In addition, Barristan told Dany his father lusted after Joanna Lannister, which is Tyrion's father or putative mother. And the wedding of her and it's his real mother. You can't have a putative mother. Like, you pop out of an actual
mother. Yeah,
other than Jon Snow, everyone pops out of a real woman's vagina.
Yep.
Jon Snow and the Shadow Baby. Everybody else has mothers that we know about. In addition, Barristan told Dany's father, okay, we already stuck that, at the wedding of her and Tywin, and made remarks about how Prima Nocta was no longer in effect. Not just that, like, there was a lot of hints that at the very least, the Mad King took license with Tyrion's wife. Whether that's like a smack on the ass, or that's an inappropriate comment, whether that's just, I'm taking your lady to the bedchambers and you got shit to say about it. Who knows? Even in the show, they played up the relationship with Tyrion being able to free the dragons. Aeron, I think you did a spoiler cast on this a while ago, but I wanted to get both of your opinions now that the show has passed the books. Thoughts? One of my second hot theories is Tyrion is a time traveling fetus.
Oh God.
Okay. So yeah, buckle up for that one, Jim.
Yeehaw.
So basically, this theory goes around, like, there's a lot of association with Tyrion. Like he says in the books that when I told my uncle that I wanted to be a dragon rider, and he told me the dragons were extinct, that he cried. He has dreams where he rides a dragon and flies with dragons. We have the story where Barristan tells Dany that, you know, Joanna Lannister might have been raped by the Mad King Aerys. The timeline. The other thing, I found out a couple things at the Con of Thrones. I'm the only person in the world that's like a theory person that doesn't hate this theory. Because the line of argument is, this takes all the dramatic air out of this situation. Oh, but let me finish my first thought. The timing of Tyrion's birth and the license that the Mad King took with Joanna Lannister, whatever that is, mm-hmm. is roughly the time you'd need to gestate Tyrion.
Okay.
And that's significant, right? Because that's also like some of the evidence why we thought Jon was the mother of Rhaegar, because like all the timelines lined up. So people hate this theory because it takes out all the dramatic tension between Tyrion and Tywin. The fact that Tywin irrationally hates Tyrion, even though he's the most like Tywin of all of his children. He hates him because he killed his wife that Tywin loved, truly. Mm-hmm. He hates him because he's a dwarf. He hates him because he, doesn't live life the way he wanted him to live. There's a variety of reasons. And if you say, oh, well, he hates him because he knows that he's a secret bastard. And the only reason he took him in as a Targaryen, a Lannister, is because he didn't want to bear the shame and humiliation of being a cuckold in his own castle. Then that takes it out. Hmm. But I think that is looking at one end of the telescope and saying there's no way you can look at it from the other end, because it's also kind of interesting that Tywin's illegitimate son is the most like Tywin. Like, the fact that there's no blood of Tywin's at all in him, that's kind of interesting.
I suppose so, yeah.
There's also, there's some superficial things in the book, like Tyrion, Tyrion's hair is described as, like, a pale gold, which could roughly, the Targaryen's always described having, like, the silver gold hair, and he's got mismatched eyes. Which maybe some people have suggested, like, one of his eyes is purple and the other is like a more of a Lannister green or blue. The fact that there's also some symmetry, and this is the main thrust of the Tyrion as a time traveling fetus theory. The way that the books describe Dany's stillborn child is it having tail and wings and monstrous features is exactly the way they describe Tyrion as being born. Now, that was a bunch of hateful lies promulgated by Cersei, it seems like.
Yeah.
But there's also why is there that narrative symmetry, involved? And the other reason people hate that theory is because how many fucking secret Targs are going to be running around?
Uh-huh.
Like Tyrion would be the fifth one.
Right.
And that's before you go back to Dunk and Egg, where, Egg was the OG secret Targ. So I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's points on both sides, I guess. I don't know where I fall on that one.
I don't see it happening in the show, because they haven't laid any of the framework to that.
Yeah, they haven't.
But it's also, when you think about Dany, the prophecy, the dragon must have three heads.
Yeah, yeah.
Tyrion being a legit Targaryen and riding a dragon alongside other Targaryens such as Jon and Dany, that kind of feels cool.
Sure.
So I don't hate it. Mm-hmm. I'm surprised at how many lore crafters do. But it seems like if you ask the Aziz from History of Westeros and poor Quentin, I don't know why I always can't remember his name, Brandon something or other. A lot of these guys just fucking hate that theory.
Okay.
But I don't. We covered it in a while back in a spoiler podcast. But that's it. That's it for the spoiler / feedback edition of the preview podcast. I think I'm ready.
I've been ready for like 3 weeks now.
Because I was saying, Game of Thrones is the rare combination of crowd pleaser executed at a very high level and with a lot of artistic merit. Like Breaking Bad. It's a thrill ride, but also like you stand back and think, holy shit, this is really good too.
Yeah, craftsmanship is there.
And it's art's there. It's the biggest television show in the world right now.
It is, yeah. And it's just going to get more epic this season.
Right.
Like everything you've seen before is like a prelude to the awesomeness that is going to be this season. So.
I've heard that every one of these episodes is a Blackwater / Hard Home style thrill ride.
I'm so excited.
Which is kind of worrying, because that's not what I associate Game of Thrones success with. Game of Thrones is a political boiler with a little bit of magic and sex and enough holy shit badass blockbuster moments to keep you invested and leave you breathless. I don't know what a 7-episode season of Game of Thrones where they just never take the foot off the gas would feel like.
I think season four was a lot like that, the one with Oberyn.
Oh yeah,
it was
right,
just
right.
Like that beat like after jo- beat.
Yeah, every three episodes, something
like,
crazy happened.
Yeah,
Joffrey
the
dying,
purple wedding, all that stuff.
Right. Yeah.
Uh, I mean, if they just go one step further and say all seven are going to be like that. Yeah. And, you know, even episodes like Hard Home do a lot of interesting stuff character-wise and politically. Like, there was a lot of lead up to the massive battle there.
Right.
So they can do it.
But the other argument is, like, they've spent six seasons leading to all, and it's time for resolution, baby.
Yeah, you got the stuff that you wanted out of Game of Thrones politically.
It's time to consummate this
thing. We're
going to
get a little more,
but
let's fucking do this. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm ready.
It looks like, you know, from a budget perspective and from a CGI perspective, the trailer just looks nuts.
It does.
So, man, it's winter's here. It is no longer coming. It is now here.
It is.
In the middle of summer. So, we're excited. We will be back Sunday sometime, you know, after, like, if you're a club member, you can actually watch us record the podcast, and we'll be here about 10 minutes, 15 minutes after the episode ends. We'll be live we'll be live recording it, and we'll get it out, and it'll probably be out for everybody less than an hour or so after the episode. Look for it on baldmove.com.
Yep.
And then, of course, we'll have the full podcast on Tuesday, like always, and we have the spoiler edition on Friday.
If you want to see when that stuff drops, a good place to do that is subscribe to our Facebook page, facebook.com/baldmove, or Twitter, @baldmove.
Uh-huh.
Both of those places are good. The forums are also a good place.
Right.
Forums.baldmove.com.
If you want to discuss, like, your favorite pet theory of Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
And then also, finally, GameofThrones@baldmove.com, GOT@baldmove.com. That's really the only place I look for feedback, because it's already a fire hose.
Yeah,
When I get done with that, I'm not thinking, oh, let's go over and see what Facebook has to say.
I'm still hungry.
The like, nah, it's a all you can eat and then some buffet. So
yeah.
that's where, if you want to actually be considered. And also, I'm going to say this once. I get at the height of last season, I got around 1,000 emails between Sunday night and like Tuesday afternoon. And I can only read about 20 or so. So do not feel bad if I don't read, or if I do not read your thing on online. It's got to be kind of like the first take, because, you know, any take's going to have like 30 different duplicates. It's got to be a more complete or funny take. But even then, like, it's just really hard. It's drinking from the fire hose with a thimble when it comes to the show. So please don't get your feelings hurt. I know people will anyway, but it's nothing personal. It's just business. We will see you in a couple days.
Yeah.
Until then, I'm Aaron.
I'm Jim.
See ya.